City, Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is the USA Volleyball Show, and here are your hosts, Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Mandalorian. I'm just kidding. I need to catch up on that. I just thought as I was doing it, I would try to do the whole theme song, but I don't think I can beatbox that well, so it wouldn't go over well. But yeah, episode 61. Great times here at the USA Volleyball Show.
I believe this is episode 62.
Oops, you're right. My fault. Episode 62.
That's not your fault. That's just our run of show. Just a little outdated there. That's all good.
It's my fault. I definitely had 62 in my head instead of 61. Sorry about that.
We're just rolling on through. We're approaching that triple digit mark. I'm excited. Hopefully we can get there by the end of the year.
Ooh.
I haven't done the math yet. Maybe we'll look at that later. We'll do the math and see if we can get to that number.
I said ooh and did this because I was thinking like, ooh, is that calculated right? We gotta have a lot of special episodes.
I had to drop some extra episodes here and there, but yeah, maybe we can get there. Mm-hmm. How are you doing though? How was your weekend? Where are you off to next? I'm sure you're just racking up those airline miles right now, though.
I am trying to split it. And it is. It's a whole process, and I need to just stick with one airline, but it's hard with budgeting and whatnot. And plus, our club sends us on different airlines depending on budgetable, I'll say. But I actually just got back from Atlanta this past weekend, beginning of April. Fun fact, there were 6 national qualifiers over this past weekend. I believe 6 national and regional qualifiers. So busy weekend of teams earning bids. And, a little bit of our team, the way we performed in Atlanta, was definitely a learning experience. And I'll leave it at that. So a lot of learning experiences, I'll say.
You gotta have those, though. You gotta build yourself up from somewhere. If you start at the top, you can't improve much from there, right?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. And we definitely have not started at the top, but learning experiences for sure. For me,
it's exciting though. That's exciting though. Yeah, like you mentioned, the ton of national qualifiers last weekend, and a lot of teams earning bids, getting ready for nationals. We're right in the heat of it. This is really exciting for volleyball right now.
And just to talk about Big South again, just because I was there and witnessed it. I mean, that Georgia Congress Convention Center is a huge.
I've never been.
We definitely had over 200 courts. I think it was over 220.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
Across,
for a qualifier.
Across about 4 separate convention center halls. And like hall A, hall B, hall C, hall connecting B and C. Like, it's ridiculous. There are over 2,000 teams there. So I think that's by far the biggest qualifier that USA Volleyball and USA Volleyball Regents have to offer. It's insane.
Wow. I had no idea it was that big.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's in the name, though. We should have known. Right? Big South qualifier.
They don't call it Big South for no reason.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. This past weekend, it was actually pretty nice here in Colorado. So I got on a patio on Saturday. I was pretty much there all day. It was nice, soaking in the sunshine. It was 65 degrees.
Make any hibachi while you're on the patio there? Anything?
No. That's in the garage. I need
party
to,
foul. Party
need foul. To dust it off and warm it up for the season. But it was a nice weekend. And just got me excited for summertime.
I think this week should be pretty nice as well. I mean, I think being Salt Lake, it's supposed to snow as I'm going. Just perfect timing.
Well, soak it in before you leave, though. That's for sure. Yeah, I think today's supposed to be pretty nice too. So I'm going to have to get outside and go for a walk.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Well, let's move on to the episode. Episode 62.
We got the app that here. No, I'm just kidding.
That's right. That's what we're doing here. That's right. In case you missed it, though, go back and check out episode 61 featuring U.S. Women's National Team libero Morgan Hintz. We caught up with Morgan at the 2023 WNT Open Program, or as Karch says, Volleypalooza, at the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Training Center. We chatted with Morgan about her background, playing professionally overseas, as well as domestically with Athletes Unlimited and her experience in that league. Chatted with her about her family and personal goals looking ahead to this season, and much, much, much more. Really a super great episode. Definitely go check that out. And it's also available to watch on the USA Volleyball website, usavolleyball.org, and our YouTube channel. So exciting that we have those video episodes now. They're
like, I know.
You know, it's just kind of weird like, seeing me on.
I know. Yeah, if you look back and feel like, why do I look like that? Or why did I do that? It was just like, what are my hands doing? Or like, ew, I don't know. It's just, oh, good time.
You're always the biggest critic of yourself, though. So I'm telling you that you look great. So,
hey, I'm telling you that you look great.
There you go.
Positive affirmations all around.
Here we go. I love that. I love that. Well, let's keep moving on here and get into it. The news with Hughes.
All right. Congratulations to friend of the show, Kelly Chang, and her partner, my cousin, Sarah Hughes.
I'm just kidding. We're not cousins, but I really wish you were because she's super cool.
On winning.
I invite her out to the family reunion.
Absolutely. Next time we have one. I don't know if we're having one this year, but you know, we'll get her on the invite list.
But congrats to them on winning their fourth volleyball World Beach Pro Tournament event since reuniting. So applause to them. The pair won gold at the Topeak Elite 16 in Mexico last week. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Got it.
Also, another congratulations to Jordan Hoppe and Charlie Saragusa on taking bronze at the Beach Pro Tour Futures event in Australia over the weekend. Man, they go to the coolest places. Mexico, Australia.
I think we said that last week. We got to get on this tour.
We got to partner up. All right, we got to partner up and start trading.
Like right. That's how we'll get to the triple digit episode.
Yep.
Just do a couple extra.
Bring this show on the road. Yeah, bring this show on the road. Yep. Mm-hmm. Curtis will be our coach. Bam, right there, everybody. Bree will be our financial advisor. All right, back to news with Hughes. I'm getting off topic. The Volleyball Nations League is coming to the United States. Watch the world's best volleyball athletes in person on home soil. Watch the men's three-week leg of the tournament hosted in Anaheim, California from July 4th through July 9th. And then watch the women's finals hosted in Arlington, Texas from July 12th through July 16th. Buy your VNL tickets for Anaheim and Arlington now. There's time, so get tickets to see both events. The 2023 Beach National Championship will return to Fort Lauderdale, Florida on July 18th through the 23rd. Registration is now open on usavbracketpal.com. All questions, comments, and concerns can be directed to beachevents@usav.org. Interested in men's college volleyball? Check out our website for weekly roundups to stay up to date on results, rankings, key matchups, and much, much more. Also, Hall of Fame tickets are now on sale. The event is happening May 24th in Dallas, Texas, right before USA Volleyball Open National Championship. But celebrate with USA Volleyball's greatest and get your tickets right now. For more information on the latest news, visit usavolleyball.com. org.
Right now, on to great job there. Now on to today's show. We caught up with U.S. men's sitting national team outside hitter Chris Seelkop ahead of the team's exhibition matches at the Lone Star Classic against Canada that just concluded today at this recording on Monday. But hope those went well. I did see one photo of the team signing doing autographs and they, someone walked through with a croc. So they were signing their croc for them.
Of course.
So that was super cool to see that. But yeah, great conversation with Chris. We chat about his extensive background, in Paralympic volleyball. He's not only a sitting volleyball Paralympian, but also, was there for the standing Paralympic volleyball team, in 96 and 2000. So we talked to them about those experiences and chat with him about his job outside of the team. Chris is a CEO of several area YMCA locations and camps, but great conversation, like I said, and awesome just to chat with Chris, especially right after seeing him at their training camp, which was, I believe, in February. But great to catch up with Chris there. But enough from us. Here's Chris. Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. Of course, we just saw you at the men's sitting training camp that just happened. When was that? Early February?
That was January.
January.
It was cold.
Yeah, it was a little cold that week. You never know what you're going to get in Colorado. It's, you know, it'll be cold one day and then, you know, 70s and sunny the next day.
Walk to practice Sunday morning, negative 10 degrees.
That's right. That was that week.
I fly out that afternoon. I get back to Florida, 81 degrees.
Oh, my gosh. Did your body just go into shock there? That's awesome. Well, yeah, of course, it was great to see you there. I know we talked for a little bit while you were there, and happy to have you on the podcast here today. So thank you for taking the time to sit down with us.
My pleasure.
First question, just to kind of kick things off, what are you benching nowadays on the bench press there?
I don't bench press. I haven't bench pressed in probably 30 years, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You never know what those arms you got.
That's your triceps. It could be the bench press. But no, it's too hard on my shoulders. I stopped bench pressing probably my late 20s because it was just killing my dead joints.
What's your like go-to workout routine? What's the secret to that physique you have?
You know what?
I can is work it KFC? I was talking about KFC before this. Is it KFC?
You know, I get one question from guys about that. How come women never ask me that question? Guys ask me that question. Guys in the gym. So my real quick answer is I can tell you, but you're not going to do it. But what the secret is this, and I tell the guys this, eight sets per muscle group.
Okay.
Most guys only do three or four. So I do 8 sets per muscle group in a pyramid fashion. So you go from lighter weight to heavier weight. I never max out. So the most I'll do is, or the least I'll do reps is 8. And most I'll do is 12 to 15 reps. So it's kind of, I stole that from Arthur Jones, who did Nautilus and MedX. He's like the pioneer of fitness. And years ago, I actually trained his facility in Lake Helen. So Nautilus was made in Lake Helen, Florida when I was a teenager. And so that influenced my workout. But yeah, it's just 8. So honestly, my workout, I'm going to do it two times a week. That's it, for an hour and a half.
Oh, just twice a week?
Just twice a week for an hour and a half.
You don't like mix up the muscle groups like throughout the week, or is it just full, like full on all muscle groups twice a week?
No, I'll do a circuit training as I go, and I never stop. So I have a my zone heart rate monitor, and I keep it above 60%. So I don't stop and talk. So all these guys in the gym, all these kids on their phones, on machines, on their phones, I kick them off. I say, get out of my gym, because you don't stop. You don't stop to talk and chat. I don't stop. So yeah, so I'll do like chest, and then I'll do abs, and then I might do a leg, and then chest, and abs, and then legs, or chest, abs, and something else. So I usually do 3 muscle groups at one time, but I rotate around so they rest. So it's not back to back to back to back.
Yeah, back when I was hitting the gym pretty hard, I was that guy. I was that guy on my phone in between sets. So you'd be coming around kicking me off those machines.
Kill me. And the other thing is,
I got to find the right song, Chris. I got to find the right song to get me in that mood.
And the other thing is that I tell people, I didn't write this song in my 40s. And I don't know, you tell my age is now, but I didn't realize this is the protein. So I do a protein shake in the morning and the night every day. So even the days that you don't work out, I do, because your body needs that protein even when you're not working out. And I was finding out my average intake was 30 grams of protein and I needed 100. And so once I started taking the protein shakes, I really see some gains, and it was consistent. So I actually had a nutritional deficit going on. That's the other thing that a lot of young guys and athletes, men and women, they don't address the nutritional side of the workout. They only address the routine side. And so you got to cut out all that junk food and other stuff that's not doing your body any good.
And those two aspects work in tandem with each other too.
Yeah.
Chris, this was more than I was hoping for in your answer. We got the whole secret here. We're going to have to do like
something. I'm not getting paid for this.
I know. We got to get you paid for this. No, we got to get you for some like website article or something. just training and nutrition with Chris Seelkop, something like that.
Yeah. Fabulous over 50.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Lara, I hope Lara is taking notes here in the chat for us. This is awesome. Well, let's move on here. Talk about your introduction into volleyball. How were you introduced to the sport?
Oh, you know what? It's so funny. I didn't even like it when I first started playing. I was a basketball player. I grew up playing basketball, you know, 6'6". Always played the game, just loved it. And even though I lost my leg when I was 7 years old to a lawnmower accident, and I grew up playing basketball. My older brothers played it. In fact, my sister played it. I played on a you know, state ranked team and had a chance to play in college a little bit. And it was just until, you know, I was graduated and I looked for an opportunity to play I heard about some Paralympics, but not these were like 92 or so. Heard some, you know, because back then we didn't have the internet, so everything was in magazines. And I was looking for a basketball, like standing basketball, and there was none. All I had was wheelchair basketball, and I really didn't want to play wheelchair basketball. It wasn't my thing. In wheelchair basketball, you got to know how to maneuver a wheelchair, and that was something I had no skill in whatsoever. So they didn't have one, and then one day I was sitting in my prosthetist, the doc guy who makes my legs, his office, and I saw a magazine article on the volleyball team. I said, huh. I said, you know what? And then the next month, Volleyball Magazine came out with an article on the U.S. standing disabled team. And a friend of mine saw it. He brought it to the office and said, hey, look at this. And I said, you know what? I just want to play to prove how good I am with other amputees. I never saw another amputee. I'm in Florida. The God's waiting room, as we could call it. All the other amputees I saw were like 60 years old. Never saw another my whole life. I never saw another amputee my own age ever, up to 24 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So I said, oh, look at these guys. I bet you I'm better than they are. So that's kind of how I got into it. But I will say my interest in volleyball was actually the 84 Olympics was where I was first introduced to the volleyball on television, watching it. And I saw Karch Kurai pancake a spike. Coolest thing my whole life. But I said, who pancakes a spike? I mean, you pancake a tip, all right? But no one pancakes a spike, especially here in National Volleyball. And I said, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. I want to do that.
Man, the reaction speed for that is just mind-blowing to have that instinct to do that.
it just blew my mind. I didn't know about the sport, and it blew my mind. So that's cool. That's what I want to do.
So as you know, were introduced to the game, what were those, you know, I think you kind of tease it a little bit, but what were those rude awakenings you had right when you started and figured it out that, you know, maybe you did have some stuff that you wanted to learn that from the pros that you were now competing with?
Yeah, the biggest wake-up call is passing is hard.
Especially,
Hit the ball is easy. Hit the ball is easy. Pass the ball is hard. Yeah. Coach made it look way too easy.
I feel like my co-host Clarence and I talk about this all the time, is hitting. Especially on the men's game, for the men's and boys side, I feel like hitting is like what gets you into the sport. And I don't know if that was kind of the same feeling that you had, but, and then when you figure out you got to pass too, you know, serve, receive, that's the hard part of the game, right?
Yeah, I was brought in, so I'm 6'6", BK, blending amputee. I can jump. In fact, when I tried out for the team, it was during a tournament they were playing in Atlanta, and I had on sweatpants, and I warmed up, and I didn't know later, but the guys thought I was some able-bodied guy who hopped on the court to do the hitting lines with them. Right. But so I was a minute with a blocker, so he put me in the middle, and that was my job, you know, as I think it was Bob Samuel said from the 96 middle blocker, only two ways to hit a ball as a middle blocker, hard and harder. So that was my job, was hit the ball hard. And then all of a sudden, give you a quick story, 96, there's a rule change for our classification. Something happened, and I end up passing in the medal rounds of the 96 game. So I go from being hidden in the corner, I think we had an injury or something happened, and I'm passing. And we play in Poland, right? We play in Poland in the bronze match. I've been playing the game for 2 years, maybe, all right, as a middle blocker. So now I'm a middle blocker and primary passer. Never happens, right? Poland, I see the guy gets about 10 feet behind the end line. Because, you know, when we play, we don't have no potential for the end line. You know, the courts, they're small. You play in these multiple court, you know, situations, two courts in the gym, whatever. He's standing 10, 15 behind the end line, 15 feet behind. I'm like going, what's he doing back there? What's he going to do? All of a sudden, he just unloads this floater from hell. This thing's moving like 4 feet back and forth on me. And I'm like this, trying to figure out. That's what I learned. Passing is hard. He literally served me off the court. Only time in my career I got pulled off the court.
didn't do much for the middle blockers can't pass out.
Yeah, that stereotype did not. But 2 years later, they changed it where you could pass overhead, because back then you could only forearm pass.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, so you could only force, so you could use your hands. So then if you use your hands, well, now I got hands. Change. So then actually in the 2000 games, I was moved to a primary passer as middle blocker all the way around. And I'm proud to say I had 127 attempts, 78 excellent passes, and only 2 passing errors for the entire games. So middle blockers can pass.
Breaking the stereotype. I like that's it. That's awesome. Well, yeah, you kind of dived into your history there with USA. I kind of want to stay on that train. Talk to me about, and we'll go into like your years that you've played, the quads that you've played. But what does it mean to you to represent USA for the Paralympic teams?
It's a special feeling. It's you do it long enough, the newness wears off, but the pride still there. So you know you don't have that excitement like when I was in 96. It was, you know, it has all the sparkle to it. But as you get older and you do it, you better understand the pride behind it, of what it means, of everyone else who, you know, worked to provide that opportunity for you to be on the court. Because it's not like you just show up and magically there's a U.S. team that goes, you know, that plays. There is so much that goes on behind the scenes. And the older I get, the more committees I sat on, the more boards I'm on now, World Para Volley, USA Volleyball, you know, different committees for USA Volleyball I've been on and World Para Volley. And you see what goes on behind the scenes. But you know, just for USA Volleyball to send a team, recently they think they went down, the boys under 18 or under 19 went down to win a championship down in South America, I think it was. Just the logistics, just to send them down there. Those kids have no idea what went on behind the scenes for them to win that championship. But to represent the U.S., to represent your family, to represent a program, and also of all the players that came before you that made it happen. So it's a very humbling experience when you sit back and you really think about it. And also, it's pretty cool to be recognized as one of the best in the U.S. I must say, that's kind of neat.
Yeah, that is cool. I was just going back to check my work here. I was going to say, yeah, that U19 team, boys team won in Guatemala just recently. So congrats to them, and thank you for shouting them out. Of course, yeah, such an incredible honor to be recognized as one of the best, as the best to make that team. And you've made several teams throughout your years, Paralympic teams. And of course, back, you mentioned 96, 2000. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but those were with standing Paralympic teams. And then, of course, in 2004, 2016, you were with the sitting team. So tell me about some of those experiences. You mentioned the new feeling from 96, but you know, through those years, what were those experiences like for you? Differences, highlights, any of that?
You know, 96, your first games. I've been playing for 2 years, kind of thrown into it. We got a bronze. We got totally demolished by Poland in the bronze medal match. We were outclassed. It was a learning experience, though, because we had a lot of infighting. I mean, we literally had a Chernobyl-level meltdown on the court that match, which you never had before. And we had sponsors in the crowd, and the pressure just got to us. And the cool thing is that after the match, I apologized to the guys. The other players apologized. And the next year, we saw Poland again in 97 in the semifinals of a Pan Am Open. It was open tournament in Montreal. And we beat them in 4. And then we went on to beat Canada in the finals for the gold medal. And that was my first time I was awarded. I was named to an all-tournament team. But what's cool was just the team chemistry that came together in 97. And it was born out of the defeat, demolished, embarrassment, just meltdown that we had in 96. And that's probably one of the coolest things. And it was the same players. Well, most of the same players, probably 8 out of 12 players were returning the next year. That was one of my favorite team experiences I've had, was turn around and we all bonded and we learned from it and we won in 97. 2000 was probably the most bitter loss experience, much worse than 96. 2000, we were favored. We went in pool play, last match against Slovakia, both us undefeated, beat them in 4. Get into the first rounds. We win that one. We get into the semifinals against Canada, one of our arch nemesis. Canada was up and coming team then. Up 2-1. We lose game 5. 15-13. We get dropped down to Matt Bronze. Bronze, we're playing Slovakia again. We beat them earlier. We are up 2-1 again. We lose that match 16-14. So we finished up in 4th place, and we only lost 2 matches by a total of 4 points.
Wow. Wow.
Crushing. Then on top of that, it was the last preliminary games for standing. And I remember after that match was over against Slovakia, and I knew what was coming. I knew that it wasn't going to – they were disbanding the sport. I literally sat on that court for probably 45 minutes, just sat there. And just couldn't believe that was over. Devastated by the loss. But then the whole – in fact, I do motivational talks. I tell a story. That, so you get a ring. So whenever you go to the Paralympics, you get a ring. I couldn't look at that ring for 2 years. It sat in the drawer. Couldn't even look at it. I was so devastated, so disappointed. Because you work so hard to get there. And you're up 2-1 twice. And you blow it twice. It's just a hard thing to live with. It's such a hard thing to live with. But, you know, it's part of sports. And you grow from it. Eventually, I got over it. I grew from it, and I learned a lot from it.
I love that that redemption storyline you said at the beginning there from the 96 loss, and then just redeeming the team, redeeming to win gold there. But yeah, like you mentioned, it's you work so hard. These athletes work so hard for a quad, 4 years to get to that moment, and you know no matter what happens, you can reflect on the fact that you were there. You were the best, you know, in your sport, and you made it on that team. You made it to those games, but still having that feeling of being so close, like you guys were in 2000, is crushing. And I can't even imagine that feeling that you had, and especially, you know, you saying that you were sitting on the court afterwards. That's just, man. Man, what a picture you painted there. That's wow.
Yeah, it was bad, but you know, we had other defeats, you know, afterwards. And but one thing that I've learned is, and I do this in my talks, is that, you know, me and defeat we're on a first name basis. he knows my name as well as any other name, but you have to learn from it, and you learn from it so many times. And unfortunately, it's like experience. You do it enough times, you know, you get better at it. But for me, it's what I've learned is I'm not afraid of failure. So that's it. Me and failure, we've been down that road a number of times. And when you're with so many times, you don't be afraid of it. And when you're not afraid of failure, it's what I teach the girls I coach. When you're nervous, who makes you nervous? You make you nervous. So you make yourself nervous when you realize that. And why you're nervous is because you're afraid to fail. That's why you get nervous. You're afraid of being embarrassed. You're afraid of letting people down. It's fear is the problem. So when you get to a point where you're not afraid anymore, then you don't get nervous anymore. So, and I'll give you a quick stat. That last year, USA Volleyball CR Sin team, before Worlds, I don't know what happened at Worlds, but before Worlds, I was 5-for-5 on game point swings. Before, if you look at points over 20 points, so once our team got to 20 points or more, now I was 4th in the team in kills. But when our team had 20 points or more, I was 2nd on the team with kills, 1st in hitting percentage.
Wow.
So yeah. You get to a point where you fail enough, you're not afraid of it any longer, and you don't worry about it. Because I remember Card says something I read is that when you're as prepared as you can be, then you just do your best, and you can't be afraid of anything, because you're as prepared as you can be. And sometimes the better team wins, and sometimes that's not you. But if you've done your best, you're okay with it. But you have to internalize that and believe it. If not, then you're going to still always be afraid of failure, and then don't get nervous. So that's what I try to teach my girls is being nervous is being afraid to fail. And you can't be afraid to fail.
I love that. Yeah, probably more freeing to once you realize that, too, to know that, yeah, like you said, you put in the work, you did everything you could. But sometimes the other team is just better. And that happens.
And that's what I learned. I mean, I tell another story, 2007. And my girls, they were upset because we haven't qualified yet for nationals. We got to the semifinals last tournament. We didn't make it to the finals. But they were disappointed. And I said, girls, let me tell you something. Gold, not 2007 Pan Am Championship games, gold medal match, game 5. We were down 13-8. We fought back. We're down 14-12. And I can tell you that 4 years earlier in 2003, I had the tournament winning spike out of the back row that put us into the 0-4 games in Athens. So down 12-14, game 5 to Brazil. We're on a comeback. We're on a roll. We're rolling. I'm playing right side. I get the set, and I hit that ball. I crush it out of bounds. And we lose the match. We lose our bid to Beijing. And I said, ladies, I said, you know what? We lost. But you know what? The next day, the sun came up. Yep. Life went on. And, yep. And you had to move on. The world didn't end. My life didn't end. All right. My family didn't die. The sun came up. The sky was blue. The birds started singing. It's a whole new day.
That's when the new chapter begins and the new journey begins. Yeah.
Yep.
I love that. You kind of, you brought this up a little bit, but that after 2000 and you knew ahead of time that that was the end of standing Paralympic volleyball, what were the thoughts, you know, I guess at that time, early on, switching over to sitting, were you all in on sitting after that? Were you kind of skeptical? What were your feelings there?
Yeah, you know, this was before USA Volleyball. I remember me and John Kessel had a conversation in 98 of trying to move the Paralympic sports under USA Volleyball's umbrella, because I was kind of the fundraiser, the main guy for the standing team. And the sitting team always felt like they got the short end of the straw. And the sitting team wasn't nearly as good as a standing team. they didn't have the same level of funding. The quality wasn't as good. And so I knew I wasn't done yet. I wanted to play. I wanted to represent the U.S. some more. I just couldn't do it in the discipline that I wanted. And so I say, no, I the same team is, they were bad. I'm going to say they were bad. And if I can help the program bit better, then I'm all in. And so I moved down. There were four other standing guys that moved down. Five standing guys. I say moved down. When I say moved down, I don't mean moved down a level. I mean we moved down to the floor, the play setting. So about five of us moved over to the sitting program. Out of the five, four started the very first tournament on the sitting team. So there was a little bit of rub there from the existing sitting players, but on the other hand, it was something that had to happen if you're going to move the program to the next level. And that's kind of when it really started to develop into a more of a contending team. That moving to the next tier of competition on the international level was when they did close the standing team down and move to the sitting team. But it was tough. It's a different arm swing, to be honest with you. We talked about this past weekend. The arm swing for standing volleyball, the arm swing for sitting volleyball is similar. But there is, you can tell guys who played only sitting volleyball in the world as opposed to guys who played standing and then they moved over to sitting. It's little nuances in the swing. That makes it a little bit easier to get the ball, you know, to hit the ball. But yeah, it was a learning because again, you had to learn to move with your arms and position and it's a faster game too. Sitting is a much faster game than standing, and you have to make sure you get your hands up in time or you're going to be wearing a face mask. Yep. So, it's just, you know, it was a learning curve, you know, blocking the serve, stuff like that. There's a little difference between standing and sitting. But if you ever listened, if you've talked to Kevin Barnett, so Kevin puts in a team in, and Kevin's a friend of mine, and he always likes to give his opinion on the court through the net about stuff. You know, you think he only commentates off the court? No. On the court also.
24/7, no.
He's always commentating all on the court. But he gets a team up from California. And so Kevin would be a good person to talk to about the differences of standing volleyball sitting volleyball.
That's awesome. Yeah. Did you have any, I guess that transition from standing to sitting, what were those struggles early on? Was it the speed of the game? Was it the mental, like you mentioned, moving around with your arms kind of become your legs sort of, what were those kind of early struggles for you?
Moving by far, it takes years to really retrain your brain and have your hands on the floor and ready to move and also how to move. That's the other thing is I really didn't learn a good way how to move until after I retired and came back. So it's the moving part is so key. I remember Bill Hammer, that he was our coach at the time in 2002, the men's team. We were playing in Egypt, and he said he was talking to another foreign coach, and the foreign coach says, you know, your U.S. team, you're big, but you're very stable. But if we don't move at all.
Yep. That's awesome. I love that. You mentioned retiring, and that kind of brings me to another question I had for you later on was, What brought you to the decision to retire, and then obviously what brought you back to coming back to the team too, and continuing to compete?
Yeah, you know, I talk about, you know, you play until the sport's not fun, and I actually retired for about a year in between 2005, I think, after Athens. I took a year off because it just wasn't fun for me anymore. And Athens was a success for us for the program. We finished, I think, in sixth highest we were finished, and I led the team in scoring and stuff, but it just stopped being fun. And I took a year off. I came back, and then 2007, I stopped playing. And that was more of you know, family life. So I had two girls. One was 7, one was 4, and I wanted to coach them. I mean, I work in the YMCA, and they're going to come to YMCA sports. I want to be their coach, and and I wanted to be involved, and I didn't want to be away on Saturdays and like I am, you know, a lot of times now. And then also it's I was career, you know, I wanted to be a CEO in the Y, and I knew I had to focus on that. And so it was a combination. It was this whole combination of things that just kind of came to a point where I made a decision, you know, I gotta, you know, I've been playing sports since 95 at that point. I put my years in, you know, I think maybe it's time for me to go do something else for a bit and focus on my family and my career. And that's what I did. And that's what drove it. Then in 2015, I get a phone call from an old setter who had also retired, Jose Zabala. And I was in Texas. I was the CEO in Texas. And he calls me up. He goes, Chris, Team Florida, Florida region, Steve T. Bishop. He's getting a sit team together for the Open. We want to know if you want to play. I said, Jose, I'm in Florida. I mean, up in Texas. I don't know if I qualify. I said, oh, you still have a house in Florida, right? I go, yeah, well, then you're good. I said, man, I haven't touched a fly ball in like years. I don't think so. He goes, look, Steve will pay for your airfare, your hotel, and you'll get some spending money. I said, I'm in it. I'll play it. All right. It's good.
Sold.
So he was getting a team out for the Open, for the U.S. Open in Detroit that year. And so we went. We actually won it. We got gold. We won the tournament. And after that night, we went out to dinner, and two of the guys came with us who weren't on our team. They were on other teams, but they were on the U.S. team at the time. It was J.D. Morocco and Charlie Swearinger. And they came to dinner, and there was like eight of us. And the banter that went on at that dinner was so freaking funny. I laughed the whole time. And I realized I sat, and again, I was in Texas. All my friends are in Florida, and I was a little bit isolated. And that whole time I sat there and said, you know what? That's what I miss. I miss the team chemistry. I miss being on a team. I miss the environment. And they asked me, they go, hey, Chris, we could use you. We could use you on the national team. You still got skills. You got size. We qualified for Rio. Would you consider coming back? And it happened to be that same year, 2015, me and Eric Duda, who played together, Eric's on the set team also. We played in a beast tournament in Thailand that year. We got silver in the beast tournament. And he was kind of working on me from the other side, going, hey, Chris, we're going to use you coming back. Hey, you actually now can have a stipend and you get paid and you have insurance and something we didn't have back in the day. I said, oh, all right, that's looking, maybe I'll do this. So,
sound too bad, yeah.
Yeah, that's not bad. So it was kind of, I like the guys. All right, so I met most of the guys at the Open in Detroit. Great guys. I liked them. Funny, good to get along with. And then the other side was my daughters were older now. They were all in high school. They didn't play any sports any longer. So I didn't have to, you know, I was freed up from that responsibility. And it just, you know, everything kind of met. And then I tried out for the 2016 team and I made it. And I ended up starting, which I didn't expect to start, but I started all the matches. And so it was a great group of guys. I mean, and the difference is, and I tell stories, my first stint, I guess, with the U.S. team, I played to win. And that was my focus. My second stint, I'm playing to enjoy the experience and to enjoy being on a team. And I will say my first year on standing team, I did stuff that probably was not the best team chemistry stuff to do because I was young and stupid. So I had a situation when I came back in 2016. You had 16, 17 guys vying for 12 spots. The team had already qualified for Rio. Oh, here's this guy who used to play, all of a sudden walking in, taking a spot of somebody else who's already there. So I had a lot of careful, I'd say groveling, but I had a lot of really creating relationships I had to make with players who kind of resented the fact that I may have taken their friend's spot who's on the team. I just came in from retirement and they thought I came in just to play on the Rio team, that I'd be gone, you know, just for the experience. And I had to tell them, no, I'm back for a while. I'm not here just for one year. So I really had to change how I approached being on a team compared to my first stint when I was the guy. I was the main hitter, you know what I'm saying? So I had to be a role player now, which I was fine with. I didn't want to be the main guy. I wanted to be a role player.
So it sounds like we got Eric Duda to thank. We got Florida Commissioner Steve Bishop to thank for bringing you back in here.
No, it's Steve's fault. Don't say it's his fault. He's the root of all this.
Oh, that's funny. I'll have to tell him that next time I see him. I'm sure you tell him that all the time, though.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Kind of moving off the court a little bit, I should say, is, and you mentioned this before, but your work with the Y. Can you talk about your role with the YMCA and what you do now and everything you do with the YMCA?
Yeah. You know, the YMCA is my only employer since I've been out of college. So I've been with the Y 28 years full-time, 32 years part-time. I'm currently a CEO of seven branch associations. So we have a residence camp, and then we have six full facilities. And it's in the Daytona Beach area. So Volusia and Flathead County are two areas of responsibility. And I love it. COVID was a challenge. Able to get our YMCA out of COVID, and we're as healthy now as we ever were. We're in a couple, we're in a multi-million dollar renovation right now, one of our facilities. I'm partnering with another city in Flagler County on a multi-million dollar facility up there to build a new YMCA, and just very, very exciting. I mean, things are going very, very well. And one thing about the YMCA that I love, it's something different every day. It's not, I don't know if I could ever be an accountant or in a job where it's the same thing every day. It's such a multifaceted career that, you know, and you're making a difference in the community. And you're helping, you're changing lives. You're saving lives, you know, when you talk about all the swim lessons that we do. I mean, our YMCA, I mean, all the Ys in Florida last year did over 60,000 swim lessons.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, drowning prevention, especially in Florida, is such an important program to have. And so we have seven pools. And so we do, you know, tens of thousands of swim lessons every year. And that's a big thing. All the during COVID, we were the only childcare provider not to close down. So we stayed open through all of COVID, providing childcare for the hospitals, for the police department, for the sanitation workers, all the essential workers, the EMTs. So, you know, very, very proud of my staff for doing that, because I gave them a choice that, you know, you can stay home or you can volunteer, but you can come in and work. And staff, we're going to come in and work because the community needs us. They need that service.
That's so cool. Yeah, I was going to ask you what you enjoy most about it. But again, it sounds like just the rewarding aspect of giving back to the community is kind of what drives you to continue that work with the Y. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the kids. You know, really,
the kids. Yeah,
it's the kid. You know, we have kids who sneak into the back door into our gym, and some of our execs and program directors get a little upset. I say, you know, it just don't worry about it. All right, that's only maybe 0.5% of our members. If the kid wants to come in to play basketball, I'd rather have them in the gym playing basketball than out on the street someplace. So you know what? If you want to make them sweep a floor or clean a window or something to earn their day in there, you know, that's fine. But don't kick the kids out of the gym for sneaking in. Come on, man.
That's so cool, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that kid goes on to love basketball or love volleyball or, you know, and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
gets a scholarship down the road or to play that sport. You never know what's going to happen.
You wouldn't believe how many seniors I've talked to who said, yeah, when I was a kid, I snuck into the Y, and it was the only place I could go. And I must have heard that from 40 to 50 seniors in my life who said that when they were a kid, that was the only safe place that they could be at was the Y. They would sneak into the back door, and the program director would make them sweep the court or something, you know, as their an entry fee. So, yeah, those are some of the cool things that we get to do.
That's awesome. Yeah. That reminds me of a story I heard about a golfer, and Curtis Ward will probably, our producer here, will probably know exactly who it is, but I can't remember what the golfer's name, but he used to sneak onto a country club golf course, and one of the pros there figured it out and actually ended up coaching him, training him. And I think in exchange, he did exactly what you mentioned, sweep the floors or something like that, tend the course somehow. But Yeah, you just never know what's going to happen. That guy's a professional golfer now, super successful at the highest level, but you never know what kid's going to walk in, and are you going to be the one to shut them down and end that dream, or are you going to be the one to help them get to that point? So
yep.
That's awesome. I love hearing those stories. That's so cool, Chris. You mentioned earlier that you coached volleyball as well. Can you talk a little bit about that? What club do you coach for? And you mentioned that you got really close to securing that Nationals bid, but yeah, how's the season going?
Yeah, it's going real well. I started probably around 2015 or 2014 coaching Texas at a club called Southern Swing in Victoria, Texas. And I coached there for a couple of years. And then, yeah, I think in 2012, 13. And then I broke off. I started my own club called Victoria Juniors in Victoria, Texas. And then now I'm with DME out of Daytona Beach. And they had me on the 13s. And I can tell you, 13s is not in my wheelhouse. I'm a little too intense. So when I started coaching, and I started coaching boys basketball. So when I was in my early 20s, you know, I wanted to be a basketball coach. I used to coach teenage boys basketball. Anyone who ever coached teenage boys basketball knows that you do not dance around with teenage boys basketball. You yell at them, and you yell at them a lot. So going to girls volleyball, I had to change my coaching technique. And so I was doing 15 and 16 year olds. And then I moved to Florida. I say, just put me wherever you need me. Oh, we need them at 13 year olds. So, all right. And it's just that I can be a little too intense for that age. But this year, you know, they want me to do the elite team. Every year I said, no, I don't want to do the elite team because I travel and I train. I don't want to be in the gym 3 nights a week coaching the elite teams. And for years, they've been trying to get me to do elite teams. I wouldn't do it because I have to train myself. And that's what I told them. So this year, they said, come on, please. We have the elite coach quit. We have no one else to do elite. And finally, I agreed to it. So, yeah, so I have the 13-1 team. And, yeah, we were, qualifier in Tampa a few weeks ago. And we got to the semifinals and lost in three. And that's where I had to get the girls a whole speech about, you know, it's okay. You know, you'll have opportunities to play. It's not the end of the world. So,
yeah. Oh, that's so cool. What's your favorite part about coaching?
Seeing them improve. See, that's the other side of having 13-year-olds. So when you have the 15 and 16-year-olds, you don't see the improvement as much. When you have the 13-year-olds, that's the coolest thing about 13-year-olds, is that you can see them as they pick up a little bit more and more and more of the game, not only the physical part, but also the mental part of the game. And you can do a little more and get a little more complex and build on it. So the player at the beginning of the season is totally different than the player at the end of the season. So you almost see like this kind of an increase, as opposed to a 15-year-old, it's more like this kind of an increase. It gets better, but it's not as dramatic as from the beginning to the end, especially like a 15-1 or 16-1. But a 13-1, it's just really cool to see how much better they get. And they're like sponges. Yeah. I mean, you get to practice, and they're already on the court playing, and they're playing some games. I remember I have the 16-year-olds. I get to practice. They're coming in 5 minutes late. They're the shoes on. They're on their phones. I had to encourage them on the court. The 13-year-olds, they're just out there. They just love they play because they love the sport. They love to run around, and just seeing that love of the game is also a really neat thing about coaching.
Yeah, I think I don't coach anymore. It's been several years, but that was my favorite part too, was just seeing the development and the growth. I coached a 12 boys team, and they were the exact same way as you just talked about, eager, just so eager to play. And they were there early and wanted to play, so we'd run doubles or do 3-on-3 or something till everybody got there, but they were just so excited to play. And when I just remember, one moment just burned into my memory of one of the kids just doing something that he learned in practice, and he had been working on it in practice for so long, for weeks and weeks, and then finally it clicked in the game and he got it, and he just looked over and just the smile on his face is just burned into my memory, just how excited he was that it that it worked, that he got it. And that was, yeah, I totally agree. It's just, especially those younger ages, just seeing that growth is so much fun, so rewarding.
Yep. Yep.
I kind of want to go back to current day, to USA current day. And we talked earlier at the start, seeing each other at training. You guys just had training in Colorado Springs. What are those goals that you have early on this year? I know there's a Paralympic qualifier coming up, but what did you work on at training camp, and kind of what are the goals that you're working on leading into that Paralympic qualifier?
Yeah, we had a lot of momentum. Worlds, Sarajevo last year, great experience.
Yeah.
Best Worlds we ever had. What did we finish? Sixth, I think it was.
Sixth, yeah. Best finish at Worlds for the program.
Yeah, and we played, I mean, we took a set off of Bosnia, the number two team in the world, and we've never taken a set off of Bosnia. And in fact, the only team that took a set off of Bosnia besides us was Iran, who actually won it. And anyone knows anything about sitting volleyball knows Iran has just been a juggernaut for decades.
Powerhouse, yeah.
Yeah, Iran does not rebuild. Iran reloads. I mean, they got guys 8'2". So, I mean, that's enough.
Literally, 8'2".
That was a fear. That's like having the dream team and then adding Wilt Chamberlain to it in his prime.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
This is not even fair. So coming out of Worlds in Sarajevo, we felt really good about it. And what was unique was we converted our libero to our setter, John Kramer, and he was setting out of the front row. So we were running almost like a 5-1, which you just don't run a 5-1 in sitting volleyball. It never happens. And we still did well with it. He's, you know, John's, he'll joke, he's vertically challenged. So he's not the biggest setter you're going to have out there. And he played the front row all the way through, and we made it work. And because we were missing JD Marenko, one of our outside hitters, he couldn't make that tournament. And so we had to shuffle our lineup around, and we made it work. And we were shocked that they went out. but coming out of it, you know, personnel, we still have some injuries, you know. Tell you a really cool story, and I probably shouldn't tell anyone this because no one really knows that team, but I actually tore two rotator cuff muscles in Sarajevo, yeah. And my shoulder has been killing me. And I've been doing rehab for the past month, and we thought maybe we'll have to have surgery. Killing me in Colorado. All of a sudden, 2 weeks ago, it stopped. Excuse me a minute. Sorry.
Yep, no worries.
I've got this off my phone. It worked. And also, 2 weeks ago, started feeling better and better. And we had a training camp this past weekend, and no pain. So check that out.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
First time in my career, if I've come back, my shoulder didn't hurt ever. So I teared two rotator cuff muscles, and it feels better than it did before the team. And
wow.
And then JD hurt his shoulder, and so we don't know when he's going to come back. So we have a lot of personnel shifting right now going on just because of injuries. So we're hoping going into qualifier in Edmonton in May that we'll have a healthy team. That's our main concern right now. I know next weekend we'll be in Dallas and we'll be scrimmaging the Canadians, and hopefully it'll be live stream. We'll probably have maybe half of our roster there of our traditional stars, I guess, who started at Worlds. Eric Duda can't make it. He's coaching over at the Big South. I was supposed to be at Big South coaching, but I told my team director I got to be in Dallas playing. but it'll be a good opportunity for a lot of young guys who don't have a whole lot of court experience. And that's the main thing that separates us from the top teams in the world. So we're right now number 7th or 8th in the world. What separates us, the U.S. team, from the top five is playing experience. We offensively, you know, we have all the same guns that they have, except for Iran with an 8'2" guy. But besides that, it's what I told J. Kimmy Davis and other people using volleyball. We need more matches. We need more international matches, because I'm like, in Europe, you could drive 2 hours and play another country.
Yeah.
You know, the whole team could. And there's so many teams that play in Europe. And they have leagues. We don't have that in the U.S. We don't get the international play experience. So that's why it's so important for us to bring international teams in like Canada so we can get more of the experience of playing. If you can scrimmage guys all you want, but it's not the same. You don't have the same pressure to deal with. And I talked about earlier about how to handle pressure. You don't have that when you do inter-squad scrimmage. I just bring in another country. So it'll be a good chance for us to have some of the new guys get a lot of play court time. So when they are thrown into a match, it won't be like a deer in headlights and not know what's going on and be so nervous that they can't perform because they're so afraid to fail.
Yeah, shout out to the Lone Star Classic National Qualifier for hosting you guys. That's going to be so fun. That's this weekend.
Yeah.
First through the third, I think, or fourth?
Yeah, I think Saturday and Sunday we'll be playing at the Lone Star. But yeah, huge shout out to them. I mean, that's what we've been trying to do is for two reasons. Is have more sitting volleyball at the qualifiers. I know Boston has been doing it for years, and shout out to them because they've been huge supporters of sitting volleyball. I went up there right before COVID and I did a clinic, and hey girls, they had coaches coming to our court pulling girls off to go play in their matches. That's how popular it was.
True story. That's so cool. That's so cool.
Yeah. So what I talked to the regions was if we could get the sitting teams at the qualifiers, one is for us to get competition. Two, it's for exposure. Because you don't know when you may have a young lady or a guy. Like in Boston, I had a kid who was a BK amputee who was playing for a standing team. I said, hey, come on over and see what sitting volleyball is about. So it's a chance for us to have exposure to someone who may not know the sport or may not be exposed to it. Oh, there is opportunity to play, and I'm disabled, and I'm not qualifying or classifying. So it's a two-tier benefit for us. It helps the national team from a playing standpoint, but also helps us kind of recruit or be exposure to people who may not know about us.
Yeah, it's kind of, it just reminded me of your introduction to the sport when you found out in a magazine. It's a little bit better now because we got the internet, social media, and live streaming, all that stuff. But those opportunities for the sitting teams to get to qualifiers and get exposure in front of so many different eyes, so many people that, you know, they may know someone who's not even at that event, but they may know someone back home who is an amputee or has a disability, and they'll tell them about sitting volleyball. And then, you know, that leads to helping to develop the pipeline for those for your national teams. So it's so important to have that. And I hope there's more opportunities for you down the road, too, to get more qualifiers.
Yeah, we're working on it. The idea is to kind of rotate to a different qualifier every year, or maybe hit two qualifiers per year. That's our goal. But the cool thing about sitting volleyball is that you don't have to be disabled to play.
Right.
So able-bodied individuals can play alongside disabled. And I said Kevin Barnett can talk about that. Or the Opens. You come to the Youth Opens and have to be able-bodied. So it's a really cool sport to play. And also, I think for club directors, we're trying to get to, it's a good sport with your hands because about 80% of the game, 90% of the game is played above your shoulders. And so it's a really good way for your kids to learn that the ones who may not be comfortable with using their hands, it's a really good, you can use that as a drill or a game to play to help promote that skill.
Yeah. Almost like cross training, for that particular skill. That's awesome. Yeah. Do you bring into sitting volleyball into your clubs at all? Into your club team?
I occasionally I do, but kind of on a selfish way. I have to practice. I have to film my practices. So what I'll do is before my practice, sometimes I'll lower the net and I'll train. I'll bring some of my girls on to help me. So I do it that way. There's a high school in the area, Spruce Creek High School, who's a coach there. She's also the PE coach. And so she brings me in for 1 week or they do a week of sitting volleyball there for all the students. So I'll come in and I'll do some demonstrations for that. But it's just a fun sport. Just, you know, people just don't, they're not used to it. But once you play it, you'll fall in love with it because it's such a fast sport.
Yeah, but by the time this episode gets out, you'll have already been at the Lone Star Classic, but if you're listening to this episode right now and you happen to be at a qualifier or some event where the sitting teams are there, stop by those courts and watch. And it'll be standing room only because they get crowded and everybody is interested and wants to watch. But check it out and stick around after the matches too, because you guys will sit and talk with everybody as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we will. So there's, I don't know, we're running late on time, I guess. I don't know how much time we have left, but
couple. Keep going. Go ahead.
Well, I'll say 5 minutes left. There you go. There's a couple of funny stories, you know, funny things happen. And as I tell these stories also in the Paralympics, and I think if you saw the video they did of me at the Open a few years ago, I tell one about the Cambodian team, but we were playing Cambodia and we beat them just ever the 3, right? We get done, and there's a transportation problem after 2000, you know, just one match. You know, normally after the Paralympic Games, one team gets one bus, it's even the bus. You don't want two teams on the same bus for those reasons. Well, this group. So the Cambodians were on the bus, and they go, oh, they're on their first. We walk up, like, going, we don't know what to expect. So we get on the bus, and they start singing to us. They sing this national song. It's really so cool, and they're singing. And we're like, that's pretty neat. And so we're sitting down, right? And they get done. And I look around everyone, I go, I guess we should sing a song now, don't you all think? And then we're going, yeah, we probably should. And we're going, and I go, how about 99 bottles of beer on the wall?
Oh no, that's awesome.
I knew everyone knew, so we got through a couple of verses of that. 99 bottles of beer on the wall. That's about the best culture song I could come up with.
That is so funny. Yeah. A national song right there, a national treasure.
Yeah. So but during that match, there's another funny thing happened. During that match, I went outside the block, and so 2 years before that, 98 and 99, I was voted the best middle blocker in the world, right? So I go outside the block, and I go to the block, the guy tools me off my arm and goes out of bounds, right? I land, as I normally do, and go back to our huddle, do our little thing. I land, and I turn, and I can't move. So at first, I thought I was like caught in the net or something, and I'm looking, and I look down, the Cambodian guy came out of the net and hugged me. So I guess he was so happy. He's two of the best blocker in the world. He hugged me. Wow. And I'm like on the court looking down like this. So he goes back. I go back to my huddle. I remember my son, I started Joe Sullivan. We're in the huddle. And he goes, man, SoCop, I've never seen anyone get hugged on the court before. And they gave me, they were on me for years about that. They joked, man, I got ragged on for years because of that incident.
What a cool story, though. Just to, I don't know, like you just to, I don't know how great the program was, that they're a newer program, but, you know, it meant so much to that one individual to score a point and let alone to score a point against the middle blocker of the year. So
yeah,
that's so cool.
Real quick, if you want one more. So same year, 2000, we were playing for Slovakia. I mentioned before, the big match. And normally, I don't normally bring an extra leg, but because I was a middle blocker, start middle blocker and primary passer, I figured, okay, my leg breaks, I better have an extra one. So I brought it, but I left it on the bus. And so I told the two security guards, which you always have security detail with you, hey, can you find a bus, find my leg, you know, I need it in case my other breaks. So they leave, I go to our warm-up court, I warm up, I come back, about to go to the competition court, and they walk into the door, and I'm getting real nervous at this point, because they don't have my leg. So now I got a backup plan in my head, trying, oh no, if I can tape it, can I use another teammate's leg, and it's too short, it's going to happen. All these crazy scenarios. They hand me a note. And I open the note, and it goes, give your security detail to USA by Ball t-shirts if you ever want to see your leg again. So here I am about to play a huge match, and they're messing with me about holding my leg for a hostage. So, yeah, so I gave them a couple of shirts, and they gave my leg back.
That is awesome. That is so, what a fun story that is. Because, yeah, at those games, you know,
yeah,
Billy like that. The pins, the game, that's currency.
Yeah.
That's so funny. That's awesome. Chris, this has been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. Is there anything else that we left on the table? Anything that you'd like to share or talk about before we let you go here?
No, I don't think so. Just thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for spreading awareness for the sit and volleyball. I mean, we need more players. I mean, we need younger players. So I'm about done here, even though my shoulder feels great now after the rotator cuff tears. But yeah, the main thing is we got to identify new players for the men's team. That's our biggest goal right now.
Well, if you retire again, we know to get a hold of Steve Bishop to get you back on the court. So
I'm not returning his phone calls.
That's awesome. Chris, where can people follow you along your journey here with the sitting team?
Just Chris Silcop on Instagram. That's kind of where I post most of my sitting by ball stuff. That's the best place to go.
Awesome. Well, good luck at the Lone Star Classic coming up and also in the Paralympic qualifier coming up here soon as well.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it, Stephen. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
All right.
Great to catch up with Chris, especially, yeah, like I mentioned before, right after their training camp in Colorado Springs at the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center. Got to talk to him a little bit there, but not much, but great to like fully catch up with him in our conversation there. And just, we say this a lot, love hearing about the athletes off the court, what their lives are like off the court. And him, CEO, running seven area locations for the YMCA, and his experience running them, what his role is there, and just the rewarding, how rewarding it feels for him to do that and to see just the work that him and his staff put in come to fruition. And one of the cool stories was that he shared was some athletes, some kids come in to play, you know, basketball, shoot hoops, or, you know, whatever, any other sports. And they might not be members of the YMCA, but Chris, you know, lets that slide, and they might help him out with, you know, running a camp or, you know, doing a cleaning up the gym or something like that in exchange for getting to shoot some hoops. I just thought that was such a cool story because, like him and I talked about, you never know, you know, what that impact will have on that kid, you know, just being nice and letting them come in to play a sport that they love and where that could go from there. They, you know, they might get a scholarship, they might go pro, you just never know. And it starts there with that interaction. And that's just such a cool story that you shared.
Yeah, I think that was really unique that I got from that interview as well too. Again, like you said, I'm really just standout portion of it. I mean, you just never know how far, how deep that resonates with somebody who, you know, can't necessarily, you know, afford a gym membership or gym time or court time or any type of time there too. And, you know, there might be a full circle moment with, you know, any one of those, you know, people he, you know, gives that opportunity to. And, you know, it's give and take, you know, yes, I help you, you know, get into the gym and do whatever you need to do. And then, you know, you help us out on a friend in by running a camp or anything like that too. I think that's really, 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 really great to hear that's being done. I mean, it just, mm-hmm. I mean, just to add to, you know, what we're trying to do for Opens this year with, you know, the Special Olympics North America group, we're trying to, you know, just host a free clinic for them and, you know, host a free volleyball clinic for, inner city club that'll also be around the area in Dallas this year, too. I mean, just always, just again, pay every opportunity you get forward to just teach the game, you know, that we all love to people there, too. So that's really, 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 you know, heartwarming to hear.
Yeah, and I'm sure you really appreciated his story about his retirement. He retired from after standing volleyball in the Paralympics was done. He kind of took time away from the team, actually fully retired, and, you know, spent time with family, his career. But he was convinced to come play at Opens, play in the sitting division at Opens. And he just loved being around the team again, the men's team, and just the stories they were all sharing from back in the day and current day, and just having a great time. And that kind of sparked his fire to want to work to get back on the team, mm-hmm. and even earn a spot at Rio 2016, the Paralympic Games there, and still currently with the team now. So I think you mentioned Steve Bishop was one of the driving forces with the Florida region, getting him back there. So thank you, Steve, for getting Chris back on the team.
Good old Steve Bishop.
Good old Steve Bishop.
Yeah, and, persuasive that one.
That's right. And just a cool like kind of tie in with Opens there and the Open Sitting Division returning this year to the championship in Dallas. So super exciting for that.
I can't wait. It'll be my first time experiencing it, too. So
nice.
I'm excited.
You'll have to get down and play a little bit, even just like a warm ups too.
100% I am.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. But yeah, such a great conversation, Chris. Thank you again to Chris for taking the time to sit. I know he was like getting ready, packing for the exhibition matches in Lone Star or at the Lone Star Classic in Dallas. So thank you again.
Another very big tournament, by the way, too. So that's a lot to prep for.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And they had a pretty young squad from what he was saying, which I hope they got some great experience, great international experience competing against Canada and just helping to build that pipeline even further. So looking forward to hearing more about that and how that went. But thank you again, Chris, and sharing those stories from both your experiences with the standing Paralympic team and the sitting Paralympic discipline at the Paralympic Games. Just such a it's just so unique because he's one of the few, if I think he might be the only one now that's had that experience. Maybe Eric Duda. I'm sorry, Eric, if I'm aging you a little bit there.
We're going to come after you.
But yeah, just such a great person to talk to about all that. And you're interested in following his journey, if you're interested in following the men's journey as they gear up to qualify for Paris, you can follow Chris on Instagram at Chris Sealcup and the men's sitting team at USCB_sitting_MNT to follow their journey to qualify for Paris. They have a qualifier event coming up, I believe in May. Let me check that right now. Yep. They have the Pan American Zone Championships on May 9th through the 13th in Edmonton, Canada. So good luck to Chris and the team in that.
All right, Steven, I'm going to need you to go ahead, take a breath, grab some water, because now it's time for upcoming events with Steven. I didn't know I was going to be stalling like that, so I didn't get a chance to hold a breath. But yeah,
that was nice. That was good.
Upcoming events. Here we go.
That was good. Like we talked about at the top of the show, we got a lot. Oh, yeah. National qualifiers coming up here. It's bid season. Starting with the Show Me Girls National Qualifier Weekend 2 in Kansas City, Missouri. That's April 7th through the 9th. The Northeast Girls National Qualifier, April 7th through the 9th in Philadelphia. The Windy City Girls National Qualifier, April 7th through the 9th in Chicago. The Matt San Juniors Beach Qualifier, April 8th in Plano, Texas. The USA Volleyball Beach Tour Oklahoma event, that's the Blue Beach Bash number 1 regional qualifier, April 8th in Tulsa. The Salt Lake City Showdown Girls National Qualifier, Weekend 1, April 8th through the 10th, and Weekend 2, April 14th through the 16th in Salt Lake City. Or you can say hi to Clarence Hughes because he'll be there. No, he's now a permanent resident of Salt Lake City. The SSOVA's April Treasure Island Beach Volleyball Tournament, April 8th through the 9th in Treasure Island, Florida. The Lone Star Girls National Qualifier Week 3, April 14th through the 16th in Dallas, Texas. The Northeast Girls National Qualifier Week 4, April 14th through the 16th in Philadelphia. And the USA Volleyball Beach Tour SSOVA April Qualifier in St. Pete Beach, Florida. That's April 15th through the 16th. And the Mad San Junior April 16th Qualifier in Plano, Texas. Good luck to everyone competing in those events, and shout out to the USA Volleyball Region setting up and hosting those events. More details on all upcoming events can be found at usavolleyball.org. Now, breath.
That was a lot. That was a lot. Once again, that was a lot.
Moving on to the pro side of things, we have the 2023 Beach Pro Tour Futures in Tahiti. That's April 4th through the 8th in Tahiti, French Polynesia. We have the Beach Pro Tour Challenge, April 6th through the 9th in Etapama, Brazil, and the Beach Pro Tour Challenge in Saquarema, Brazil. That's April 13th through the 16th. I think we got a pretty good lineup of teams going to those events. So really exciting to see how they do, and good luck to those teams competing in those events.
Oh, yeah. Clarence Hughes and Stephen Mutson will also be on the tour there. We'll be in all these amazing cities. 100%.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brazil will be nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait to go over there again. I'm just kidding.
But remember, listeners, you can rate, review, share with friends, families, and teammates for those that applies to. It really helps this podcast grow and reach new listeners, as we say every single episode. Check out our new video episodes on YouTube, and you can say how amazing those microphones and the setup is, and interviews, ABCA, and all these other cool places in person. Really just applies, you know, the human interaction portion to that for those who appreciate that. And it's funny, fun fact, we, you know, created the USA Volleyball Show name with that in mind, and, you know, very, very, very future episodes too. So really glad to, you know, see us start to check off these boxes of our long-term goals. So, you know, really, really big shout out to, you know, this entire team, especially our, you know, producer Curtis Ward for all the for all the hard work he does behind the scenes there too. But we thank you all for your continued support. Do you know of a club that should be featured on a story or any sort of topic of conversation that you'd like to share with us? You can email us at the USAV show at usav.org. Leave us feedback. Let us know how we're doing. And again, any future topics you want to hear about, let us know. We can definitely get that on board for our future episodes, especially since we're trying to crack 100 this year.
That's right.
But thank you all. And until next time, thank you all for listening to the USA Volleyball Show. We are the official podcast of USA Volleyball.
This has been the USA Volleyball Show with Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson. It's produced by Curtis Ward. Our content producer is Laura Fawcett. Our marketing lead is Bree Jaycox. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate and review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the USA Volleyball Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.